when all of a sudden they heard a noise outside, a noise that they did not hear the whole time they were there, and they saw a very beautiful, fancy, rich-looking wagon with beautiful horses, the kind that a very rich person like a parrot would ride in, is pulling up in front of the store. Shh. And the mechanic says to his wife, "Could it be that this beautiful wagon is pulling up in front of our store? Maybe it just broke down or something, or maybe they're just pulling over for something else and it's got nothing to do with our store. Or maybe they are pulling up in front of our store." And all of a sudden the driver goes down from his seat and he opens up the wagon door. As for an important person, he doesn't open his own door. He's got a wagon driver to open up his door. And a very fancy, rich-looking man, and this looked like a parrot, is now stepping down from the wagon, and he's coming into the hat store. Ooh, look at this. We have a customer, hopefully. And the parrot takes a look around in the hat store. He says, "Hey, I never noticed this hat store." "Well," they said, "we're kind of new over here. We've only been here about 2 weeks." "Oh," the parrot says, "2 weeks. I've been away a few more than 2 weeks on a very important trip. And I'm on my way home to my castle. And my castle is down the road through the forest on this road. And I've passed by here many times and I never saw the store. And now I see for the first time this store. Well, it's very lucky for me, because if I went home to my castle, I'd be in big trouble, because I was away on a business trip and I forgot to buy my wife a present. Whenever I go away on a trip and I come home, the first thing my wife says to me is, 'No, what did you buy me?' Well, she doesn't say 'No,' because she just says, 'What did you buy me? What did you get me when you're away on the business trip?' And I always have to give her a nice gift. Or else, you know, it's not exactly, she's not so happy when I come home and I didn't buy her something when I was away on a business trip. And this time, I was so busy, I forgot all about my wife to buy her a present. And I was getting ready to turn back to go downtown to get her something to say that I got it for her on a business trip. And now I see this store. And my wife happens to love hats. Let me take a look around and see the kind of hats you have in this store." And the parrot takes a look around and he says, "Oh, that purple one with the green feathers and the shiny silver balls all over it. My wife would love such a fancy schmancy hat. Please take it down and let me see it." "Oh, very nice. And that one over there, that stripy one with all the shiny things all over it and the ribbons. That's a beautiful hat. My wife would love to have that hat. Let me take that one also. And that big one with the puffy cotton balls coming out of it and all that other kind of like looks like gold things. Please give me that one. And those three over there and those four over there." And all of a sudden he starts taking all the hats in the store almost. And the parrot says, "How much for these hats?" And the mechanic and his wife are whispering to each other, "He's taking so many hats. If we're going to charge him what it costs for each hat, he's probably going to get upset. So let's give him a very good deal." And they mentioned a certain price, and the parrot said, "What? So low for these beautiful hats? I know what good hats cost. My wife buys hats all the time, and I know that you're giving me too low of a price, and I could afford to pay more. Tell me what the hats really cost." And they figured out what the hats really cost, and the parrot says, "I'll be happy to pay that price." And he starts reaching in his pocket, taking out money. And as the mechanic is wrapping up the hats, ready to give it to him in boxes, the parrot says to the mechanic, "Tell me, Mr. Hat Store Man, why do you look so sad? From the moment that I came in here, you didn't look exactly, you know, so happy. You were surprised to see me come in, but I see that you're kind of sad. And as you're packing up the hats, you're looking a little bit sad. What's the problem? Well, the mechanic said to the Poritz, he felt the Poritz is, you know, kind of a nice man over here, asking him how he feels and why he's so sad. After all, I'm not really a hat store man. I'm a mechanic that works on big machines. And the Poritz says, so what are you doing in a hat store? And the mechanic says, well, it's a long story. Probably you don't have time. You want to get home to your castle. Well, yeah, I'm going to get home to my castle, but, you know, I'll have a few minutes. What's the problem? Well, I'm a mechanic on big machines, and I lost my job, and I'm out of work for a long time, and I couldn't find a job, and I went from factory to factory, and finally a friend of mine told me to go to a rabbi, and I thought the rabbi would tell me something about machines, and he didn't tell me about machines. He told me to move away, and he told us to open up a hat store. And it's very upsetting, because I don't want to stand and sell hats, and nobody even comes to our store. I want to work on machines. That's where I'm an expert. But there's no place to work on these machines because the factories don't need anybody. And the parent says, machines? What kind of machines? You know, the big factory machines. The parent says, you know what? I'll tell you something. It's interesting that I met you and you met me and we met each other. Because I have a brother. And my brother has a big, big factory full of those kind of machines that you're talking about. And a lot of those machines broke down and they're not working. And he has tried to get people to fix them and nobody can fix them. And because nobody can fix them and they're not working, it's a big waste of money. My brother's very upset. And each time somebody comes and tries to fix the machines, they don't work. Maybe you'd like to try to go to my brother's factory and fix his machines? And the mechanic says, well, I tell you, I'd like to try because I'm an expert on those machines. And the poet says, look, I'm going to write you a letter and I'm going to sign my name on the letter. And that way my brother will let you come into his factory because every day there are people that want to come to fix the machines. And he'll just get upset if you come without a letter. He'll just think you're another one of these people that, you know, can't fix his machines. And I'll tell my brother to give you a chance. And you go to his factory with the letter and see if you can fix his machines. And if you can, I'm sure my brother will be very, very happy with you. And he might even give you a good job. Because he has so many machines in such a big factory, he always needs good workers. And you seem to be a good worker and a good man. And so the mechanic was very, very happy. And the Poritz wrote the letter, and he signed it, and he put his official stamp on it, and there's this kind of wax they put on with a stamp, and he gave the mechanic the letter, and now the mechanic is so happy because, first of all, he feels something good is happening, and his wife is happy. She sold all of her hats, and she's happy for her husband that he has a chance to go and fix the machines. And tomorrow, Kindalach, we'll continue with the story about the hat store, or the mechanic, or whatever you want to call it. And so, Kindalach, the mechanic in the hat store was very surprised now, a very unexpected thing, that in the last moments, before he was ready to give up because he thought nothing was happening with a hat store, and there was nothing happening with a hat store, all of a sudden the Poritz pulled up in his beautiful wagon and not only bought the hats, which made being in the hat store worthwhile for them, but a totally unexpected thing, the brother of the Poritz needs somebody to fix machines in his big factory. And these are exactly the kinds of machines that the mechanic in the hat store is an expert in. And of course, Kinalak, these are the ways of Hashem. Like we say in the morning, Hameichin Misadei Gover. Hashem leads you to where you're going. Sometimes you don't even know why you're there, and all of a sudden some special thing happens and you see, ah, now I know why I was here exactly at this time. And it also says in Tehillim, Biyadcha itoisai. That means that my times are in Hashem's hands. Not only what happens, but exactly when it happens. Exactly what minute or even what second it happens. All of these things are in Hashem's hands. This is Hashkacha Pratis. And of course, the words of a tzaddik, that because you see, the mechanic is following the words of the Rebbe Rishab, even it's difficult for him, from these words come the bracha. Well, you didn't hear exactly the end of the story yet, so let's go on. And so now, the Poritz wrote a special letter with his own handwriting and his own stamp for the mechanic to take to his brother. And the mechanic now, Kinelach, sets out the next day to the big, big factory of the Poritz's brother, a big, important factory. And he goes there, and there's a line of mechanics waiting to fix the machines because they know the brother of the Poritz, who has a big factory, will pay them very well if they fix the machines or maybe even give them a good job. And each one gets a turn to try to fix the machines, but they just can't do it. These are very big, complicated machines with wires and wheels and grease and dials and all kinds of meters and all kinds of stuff on them and steam things and turning things and things you pull and things you push. And they were getting all mixed up and they just couldn't do it. And the Poritz's brother, who was in charge of the factory, says, oh, I've had it already. Nobody can fix my machines. I don't even want to see any more mechanics anymore. I'm just going to give up. And it's a total loss of money, my machines. Nobody can fix it. And all of a sudden, the mechanic who was in line with the letter, he says, wait a minute, before you give up. It's interesting because the mechanic almost gave up, and now the Poritz's brother is almost giving up, but just in the last minute, something good is going to happen for him. The mechanic says, I have a letter from your brother, the Poritz. Oh, a letter from my brother, the Poritz. Bring it here, please. Yes, this is my brother's handwriting. And he opens up the letter, and he reads the letter. Dear brother, I met this mechanic, and I would like you to please give him a chance to fix your machines. He seems to be an expert in fixing the big machines that you have. And the brother, the Poritz, said, well, I was going to just send everybody away, but if you bring a letter from my brother, I'll give you a chance. And the mechanic goes, and he starts fixing one machine after the other. He took a screwdriver, and he took wrenches, and he took pliers, and he took different things, and he starts fixing and draying around, and he starts plugging this into that, and he starts taking it apart and getting full of grease, but he puts things together, and he's fixing all the machines, and each one starts working one after the other, and the steam comes out of him, and it's all kinds of noise, and everything's working good. And the Poritz's brother is so excited, my machines! My machines, you're saving my machines, you're saving me thousands of rubles. Oh, you're so good, I'm so happy with you. And he says to the mechanic, tell me something, do you have a job? Well, not exactly a job. Well, what do you do? Well, I work in a hat store. A hat store? What do you mean, what kind of a hat store? Well, my wife makes hats and I sell them. What? A good mechanic like you, an expert in big machines, selling hats in a hat store that your wife makes? What kind of hats are they? Like, you know, for machine workers, big hats? No, ladies' hats with, you know, feathers and ribbons and purple and green. Well, the Poritz's brother says, how would you like to be the manager in charge of my whole factory and all the workers and all the machines? Because you're such an expert, I need somebody to take care and be in charge of all the machines in my factory and all the workers. It's a very big job. How about giving up the hat store job and coming to be the manager and the expert machinist and mechanic in my factory? Well, what do you think, Kinalach? What did the man choose? To work in the hat store more, selling the hats with purple and green and ribbons? Or do you think he chose to be the manager of the factory? Who wants to try to figure this one out? Let's see, what do you think? What did the man choose?
Factory.
He chose to work in the factory. He got a good job, a nice office, brand new tools, and a very good paying job, and a beautiful house. And maybe his wife made him a nice hat to wear in the factory, and maybe she wore nice hats too, but maybe not. The main thing is, Kinalach, all the brachas that came out, but following the advice of the Rebbe Rishab. And we learned many things about Hashgacha Pratis and the ways of Hashem, and of course the halakha words of Tzaddikim in this story. And that's the end of the story. Now, the reason I'm telling also a little story, I just read an interesting story about a minhag. Now, we know there are mitzvahs and there are minhagim. A mitzvah is something, or a halacha, that you must do. It's Shulchan Aruch, or it's a mitzvah from the Torah. A minhag is not the same as one of the 613 mitzvahs or a halacha. But it's also very special. Now, I told you once the mashal, this is not the story, but a minhag is like you have a spaceship. The spaceship has, let's say, millions of dollars of very expensive things, like computers and engines and all kinds of dials and all kinds of special radar things and special rocket ship things and all kinds of special video cameras and all kinds of radio equipment. Well, all kinds of things that you would find in a spaceship, and each thing costs thousands and thousands of dollars, and the whole spaceship can cost millions of dollars. Now, what's holding it together? What's holding the whole thing together? All the, you know, the computers connected to the engines, connected to the video things, connected to the screens and the dials, and connected to all the different parts. What's holding the whole thing together?
Nails.
Well, maybe not nails exactly, because you're dealing with metal.
Screws.
Now, a person would say, screws, you know, what's the big deal of a screw? How much does a screw cost? A few pennies. In the whole spaceship, maybe, let's say, $10 for all the screws. What's the big deal? What's important? The computers and all the special things, millions of dollars. The screws, what's the big deal? Now, we understand, though, that let's say you would not have any screws in the spaceship, and you would have all the other things. Would the spaceship work? Would it go anywhere? Or the whole thing would fall apart? The whole thing would fall apart. So therefore, you need all the important things and the expensive things, plus you also need the screws. You need both things. Each kind of thing has its important part in the spaceship. Now, the Rebbe once said, the 613 mitzvahs are like the main special expensive things in the spaceship. And the minhagim are like the screws that hold everything together. A person that's careful on minhagim, his whole Torah mitzvah stays together. A person that chas v'shalom says, oh, who cares about minhagim? It doesn't matter. Then things can fall apart. Now, I just read this story a few days ago, and listen to this. This is about a minhag. I mean, there's a very sad thing of this story, but this is not really the main part of the story. A few months ago was a terrible, terrible thing that happened in South America. That terrorists, the terrible Rishoyim, they put a bomb in a Jewish building. And exactly a certain time in the morning, the building blew up. And more than 100 people were killed.
Now, this is a terrible, terrible, horrible thing that you can only imagine how terrible it is for so many people to die from a bomb in a building. It's really happened. Now, there are certain stories that came out of it also of people that, like a miracle, were not in the building or were not next to the building. Because if you were standing in front of the building also from the explosion, the flying glass, Chas v'Shalom, a person could also not make it from being in front of the building. Now, the story was that I read like this. There was a certain young lady, she was a kala. It was 3 days before her wedding. 3 days before her wedding. And she had a doctor's appointment. Now, the doctor's appointment was near this building. The doctor's office was on this side of the building. Let's say it was on this block over here. The next block is the building. And she lived a block away on the other side of the building. So, here is her house. The next block is the building that I told you exploded from the bomb. And the following block is the doctor's office that she has an appointment exactly 10 o'clock in the morning. I think that's what the time it was. And she, this woman, always, when she went to an appointment, was always on time. You know, some people are late, and some people are even early. She always made sure that she was on time for an appointment. She would leave the house, you know, enough time to get there exactly. And that was her way. Now, Dafka this morning, she gets ready to go to her appointment. But all of a sudden, she remembers that there's a very important minhag, the custom for a chasan and a kala, that in the week before the wedding, and even the week after the wedding, they have a shomer or a shomeres. Now, you know what a shomer is? Anybody know? What's a shomer?
Somebody that is watching.
Okay, somebody that's watching, a guard walking with you. In other words, a chasan or a kala do not walk by themselves the week before the wedding and the week after the wedding, because since the chasana, the wedding, is such a halakha thing, and we know if there's something very halakha, the other side, the Yetzirah side, can make trouble. Chas v'Shalom? So, if a person's walking by themselves, it's more of a chance, the Yetzirah, to make trouble. And if you're walking with a shomer, it guards you and protects you from the Yetzirah. This is the reason that of the minhag, the reason for the minhag to have a shomer. So this kala remembers that she can't go to her appointment by herself, even though it's only two blocks away, that she's going to go out of her house and walk a few blocks, because the minhag says you need a shomer, a shomeres for a woman. So she has to get somebody to walk with her. There was nobody else home in her house, because she thought maybe one of her brothers or sisters could be the shomer or the shomeres. Nobody was home. She said, oh, my nephews, my nieces, my cousins, other family members that are close by, she calls their houses. Nobody's home. Nobody answers. Oy vey. I can't get a hold of anybody. And I can't go out without somebody with me. Then all of a sudden she thinks to herself, wait a minute. What am I going to do? To go to the doctor was very expensive, but she had insurance. You know, insurance means that she's not going to have to pay for it. Because if she goes to this doctor, because if she has insurance, it's for free. Right after the chasana, she's planning to move to New York. She says like this, if I go to my doctor today, I'm going to get all the things that have to happen done to me, whatever she has to go to the doctor for, I won't have to pay anything. If I leave it for later, and I'm moving to New York right after my wedding, and I go to a doctor in New York, and I don't have insurance in New York, I'm going to have to pay hundreds of dollars. She says to herself, so probably I should go, even without somebody watching me, in order to save all that money. Because if I don't go, I'm going to lose the appointment. and I'm going to lose all that money because I'll have to do it in New York. So she starts to think she should go, and even though she won't keep the minhag, so she'll go. But then she thinks to herself, wait a minute. She learned that a minhag is also very important, it's very halakhic, and you shouldn't just push away a minhag. You shouldn't push it away, even if it costs money. Now, by the way, this is a very interesting and important thing. The Arizal, did you ever hear of the Arizal? The halakhic mekubal tzaddik who lived in Tzfas, who was so halakhic. In a way, he was even higher than Moshe Rabbeinu in his Ruach HaKodesh, and he was only 38 years old when he passed away. They once asked him, you do mitzvahs and other people do mitzvahs. How can you be so halakhic in the mitzvahs you do even more than other people? So he said two things. Number one, whenever I do a mitzvah, I'm completely besimcha. I'm totally happy. And number two, whatever it costs to do a mitzvah, I never argue the price, I pay it. I pay whatever the price it is to do a mitzvah, and I never feel like I'm losing money doing a mitzvah. Now, whether the girl knew it or not, it doesn't matter, but she knows that idea. If a mitzvah costs you money, or even a minhag costs you money, do you try to save the money and push away the mitzvah or the minhag, or you don't care about the money, you do what the minhag or the mitzvah is? Do you understand what I'm asking? If she pushes away the minhag, she's going to save money. If she keeps the minhag, she might lose a lot of money. What's more important now, the minhag or the money? What's more important? The minhag. You know what she decided to do? She decided that no matter what it costs her, how much she's going to lose and how much money it's going to have to cost New York, she is going to stay home and she's not going to go to the appointment because she doesn't have somebody to watch her to be the shamer. Kinalach, she stayed home. A few minutes later was the terrible explosion in the building and everything that happened that I told you about happened. And this young lady thought to herself, oy vey vey, if I would have gone out the door to my appointment without my shamer, like I almost did, exactly the time of the explosion, she says, I would have been exactly in front of the building. Because to get from her house to the doctor's appointment and she would be on time, she would have been exactly in front of that building. Why was she not in front of that building? She was in her house because she kept the minhag. That saved her. You understand? This saved her life. Not only she saved the money, she saved her life. Or she lost the money. It didn't make any difference. I mean, the money was no difference. It saved her life. In other words, what do you learn from the story? When you make a decision for Hashem to keep a mitzvah, a minhag, it only turns out to be good. No matter what you think you lose by doing it, you only gain more. She lost money, what did she gain?